This podcast with special guest David Egan of the Steakhouse Hall of Fame inducted Cattleman Steakhouse is brought to you by our friends at Bob Moore Auto Group. With 15 dealerships and 18 brands to choose from, visit Bob Moore, that's BOBMOORE.com. Welcome to Steakhouse Hall of Fame, the podcast. I'm your host, Ron Small, and this is the place where we honor and celebrate every facet of the steakhouse industry with the folks who put their heart, soul, and reputation into every plate served. Restaurant owners, vendors, suppliers, you name it, everything necessary to bring you that level of stellar service and quality you expect from your five-star steakhouse experience is on our list. In this episode, I welcome Steakhouse Royalty with David Egan, Director of Operations for Cattleman Steakhouse in Oklahoma City, or some call it Stockyard City. Now you know where it is. Oklahoma's oldest continually operating restaurant since 1910. David has been running the Cattleman Show for 35 years, but in the restaurant business for over 50, and yet he hasn't aged a minute since I first met him when we inducted Cattleman's into the Steakhouse Hall of Fame. What a pleasure to welcome David Egan to the Steakhouse Hall of Fame podcast. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Good morning, Ron. Good to talk to you.
Listen, you have been tremendous since we first met, and I want to brag about you, and then we'll talk about the restaurant. But you are such a switched-on guy in your industry, and I'm sure everybody tells you that. You eat, sleep, breathe, drink, hospitality, and I think if there's a place in the encyclopedia, remember when people had encyclopedias, there's got to be David Egan under hospitality. But tell me about your... You know, what I found yesterday, I forgot to mention this, that you actually went to Cattleman's when you were 10 years old. And
correct.
Kind of didn't remember it until you walked back in and recognized the furnishings or whatever. But, you know, tell me a little bit about the Cattleman story and how you fit in. Then I have a lot of more specific questions for you.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Tulsa and fell in love with the restaurant business when I was a young teen. And my father had a business that took him over to Oklahoma City, and I think I was either 10 or 11 years old, and I came over with him for a day or two, and he took me to a place to eat that was not very far from his business, and it was kind of distinct. It had, you know, red leather booths and kind of dark and beautiful murals of cattle on the wall, and it just kind of screamed steak, and we ate lunch here, and I never thought anything about it. And flash forward, another 50 years later or whatever it was, we were in the restaurant business in Oklahoma City and operated another restaurant probably about 2 miles from Cattleman's. And I had not stepped into Cattleman's until probably 1989 to 1990. And it was at that time that we were fortunate enough to be able to have the opportunity to take over the restaurant from longtime operator Gene Wade, who had had it for 45 years. He's the one that won it in the infamous roll of the dice in 1945.
We'll talk about that.
And as we got in here and started kind of finding our way around and looking for the light switches and all that stuff, it kind of dawned on me that I had been here before, and I remembered it then as a young child coming in here with my dad. So it brought back some great memories, and we're just very honored to be able to have the opportunity to carry the torch for 35 of the 115 years that it's been in business. So we're glad to be here and excited for our opportunities that lay before us, and I think nothing but great horizons for the Cattleman's and Stockyard City.
Well, you certainly, I dare say, kept that place on the map. So give somebody, if you would, a virtual tour. I like to call this theater of the mind. Tell us where the restaurant is, what we see around it, and then once you walk through the door, what you're greeted with when you walk into this classic restaurant.
Well, not by design, but by time. We're probably a classic example of low expectation and over delivery. The area town that we're in is one of the oldest areas of town, and it was begun in 1910 when the city fathers needed some commerce in this dusty little oil town that popped up called Oklahoma City. Oklahoma became a state in 1907, and the stockyards started in 1910 when all the buildings around here were built, and that's when Cattlemen's began in one of the small buildings here. So as years would have it, you know, the area had gone through a lot of transformation and had grown a lot. And then through the 1970s, when nobody wanted to have a stockyards or a packing house in their backyard because the whole city had grown around this area, one by one, the packing houses started moving out of the center of the city, of Stockyard City, to the panhandle of Texas, out in the netherworld of western Kansas and places like that. So the area started to kind of go downhill, and all the thousands of jobs that were employed in the stock or the packing houses began to disappear. So all the supported business in the area kind of drifted off. And when we came on the road in the late 1980s, 1990, the area was pretty depressed, and the restaurant was not in very good shape. But we saw the promise and hope, and Oklahoma City kind of had a void. We had gone through an oil bust in the 1980s, and some of the old established steakhouses had gone out of business during that time. So we hoped that maybe we could kind of resurrect this little sleeper called Cattleman's Cafe. And so when you walk in the door, you are greeted with a nostalgic diner side, which is the original part of the cafe. And it's still, you know, tile floor and red stools up against a long counter that has about 20 seats at it, and it has a number of different booths. It seats about probably 75 to 80 people in the coffee shop side, as we call the original cafe part. And if you go to the left-hand side in the entryway, then you go into carpeted red leather booths and beautiful murals of cattle on the back wall. And you go all the way to the back room, and it's quite extensive. We have about 325 seats in the restaurant. And you can go upstairs to a old-fashioned-looking bar that serves guests on the weekends or at night for a waiting area. And it's the inside is nothing like the outside looks. So you kind of don't know what to expect as you pull up front into our vast parking lot, and you walk in, and you're kind of like, wow, this is pretty cool, and it's big. And then you sit down and you're greeted by a very friendly, hospitable server that takes really good care of you and serves you a meal that you is better than what you've expected, and you leave happy and eager to come back.
Well, that was beautifully said, but I want to brag about first a couple of things that blew me away when I first found out. First of all, you're open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, right?
That's correct. Yes. The restaurant originally was open 24 hours a day.
Oh, my goodness. And how many steaks a month do you go through at Cattleman's? How many steaks a month do you go through at Cattleman's?
Well, let's see. It takes 1,375 pounds of beef per day to generate the steaks that we sell. So on the average week, we probably sell about 7,000 to 7,500 steaks.
Average
multiply
week.
That times four.
I'm doing the math.
Yeah.
God almighty.
We average 9,000 to 10,000 guests a week. And, you know, that includes breakfast and lunch and dinner. But 95% of the people that eat here at lunch or dinner order a steak. So, we sell steaks at breakfast, but we also sell a lot of sausage and bacon and that kind of stuff. But the steaks are the big draw.
So as you already said, admittedly, the neighborhood has seen its better days. So the restaurant, without a doubt, is a destination restaurant. People get in their cars and they drive distances to come specifically to your restaurant. And I know you also have talked about the many generations that you've seen coming in there, people who were in there with their grandparents or their parents coming back, and they're the next generation of customers. How does that make you feel when you're watching, you know, when you think about the original restaurant and how it started and look at what you've turned it into? Because admittedly, you're a big part of the success of that restaurant. Why don't you brag a little bit and talk to me about what you guys look back on as a great source of pride?
Well, I think, you know, if there's a whole other discussion as to, you know, what we did and what enabled the restaurant to flourish under our guidance. But the responsibility, you know, we're very honored when people come in today because they came in because somebody treated them good 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 20 or 30 years ago. A lot of people come in that were brought in by their grandfather or by their dad that had come here many, many times over many years. So they in kind bring their children or their grandchildren in, and it's an honor and it's a very humbling responsibility that we take not for granted, because we're not going to get those kids and their grandkids to come in if we don't take really good care of them. So we have to ensure that they're going to have a great experience and that their food's going to be really good. The memories will bring you back to try it, but if the experience isn't good, they're not going to return.
Exactly.
So we have to make sure that experience is consistent and that they have something to brag then to their kids and their grandkids. Try to keep the cycle going. But a day doesn't go by that somebody doesn't come in and say, I came in here 40 years ago or 50 years ago with my grandpa, and then my dad brought me in here, and now this is my son, and he's learning how to eat lamb fries here. And, it's part of the baptism by fire of being introduced to kind of a legendary experience. But just one thing I want to add, when we talked about the area not being in good shape 35 years ago, that has really been transformed somewhat due to probably our success, but a lot also because we put together a national Main Street program down here that has resulted in every property down here being either leased or purchased and operating. So the area is very vibrant today and in much better shape than it was when we found it.
Well, congratulations. I give you all the credit for that. Now, let's go into the Wayback Machine to World War II and tell us the very famous story of Gene Wade. And if you go to SteakhouseHallOfFame.com or get the app, you can see the Cattleman's video where there's actually a commercial that was done about this through your marketing company. And I don't want to give it away. I want you to tell the story. So let's go back in time.
Oh, okay. So Gene Wade was from Oklahoma, and his dad lived in Oklahoma City at the time in the 1940s, and he was a pretty notorious gambler and bootlegger guy, not exactly above the law. And so Gene had gone away to War II. Gene had operated a burlesque theater in Dallas, and when he came back from World War II, to go back to his business in Dallas, the gentleman that he entrusted it to had kind of run off with everything and the business was closed down. So Gene felt like his only option was to sell what he had down there and then move on back to Oklahoma and try to take up stakes here. So when he did so, he came back to Oklahoma, and it just so happened that it was around Christmas time in 1945. And his dad was part of a group of guys that booked the top two floors of the Biltmore Hotel in Oklahoma City. And there was, you know, it was always gambling and bootlegging and all sorts of nefarious activities going on the top two floors of this hotel. And they just kind of owned it. And so Gene went up with his dad on Christmas Eve in 1945 with his life savings in his pocket. And as time went on, and possibly maybe a little alcohol fuel, I'm not sure about that part of it. I'm just guessing that maybe could have led to a very, very poorly informed bet, but the gentleman that owned the restaurant at the time was by the name of Hank Fry, and he was desperate, and his winnings were down, and he basically told Gene Wade that if you can roll a hard six, I'll give you the cafe, and if you don't roll a hard six, you give me your $25,000 of your life savings that you've got in your satchel there. So it was not a smart bet, but Gene was lucky. He wasn't sure it was luck when he walked in the next day and had never been in the restaurant business before and walked in and sat down at the stool on the counter and thought, what have I got myself into?
But you missed the best part. He rolled the hard six, which is two threes. Virtually impossible, right?
It was. That's why I called it such a uninformed, it was just not a bright bet. So, yeah. Yes, he did roll the dice. He was challenged to roll a hard six, and he did roll the hard six. And when we did that ad to kind of tell that story, I think the guy rolled about 100 or 200 rolls of the dice, and it could never get a hard six. So they had to basically roll them one at a time and then basically splice the film together to make it look like it was a hard six. So that's how hard it is to roll a hard six.
Can you imagine Hank Fry and how he must have felt, thinking that this is a given? Oh, of course I'm going to win all this money. And oh my goodness, the heart dropped out of his stomach, I'm sure.
I'm sure it did. I was actually talking to a guy the other day that grew up with under Hank Fry's kids, and his grandmother actually dated Hank Fry a few years later than that, and Hank had spent some time in jail with the gambling and some of the bootlegging stuff, but he had tried to get a little honest in his work by raising cattle not too far from Oklahoma City. And he used to joke about it and say that, you know, it wasn't the smartest thing he ever did, but, you know, he lived to see past it, and he's an old man now, and he's raising cattle, and he's doing just fine.
Well, that's great. Glad there was a happy ending to that. Before we take off here, I can't not let you go through the litany of some of the famous recipes and things that you have there. You said Hank Fry, and of course it reminded me of the lamb fries, which are sort of a rite of passage for many people. So why don't we start with that and then talk about some of the great things on your menu?
Okay, well, the lamb fries, it's a little murky exactly when they started being served here. We know how they came about being served here because the packing houses right behind our property were processing, beef and lamb and pork and everything else, and they didn't have any outlet. Nobody would buy the testicles from them, so they would just throw some in the boxes that they would ship meat over to the restaurant, and the cooks at the time really had nothing to do with them, so they would just cut them, slice them up, and bread them, and lightly fry them, and just put them on a plate like a garnish. And people started eating them and liking them, and next thing you knew, they wanted a whole plate of them or a big platter of them to eat because they liked them so well. So we have a picture of the restaurant. The neon sign out front was taken in the early to mid 1940s. So in 1940, the lamb fries were significant enough that they're part of the neon sign out front that
no
says
kidding.
Cattleman's Cafe, and then, and underneath it says lamb fries.
I didn't know that.
So, I mean, you've got steak, you've got, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but lamb fries were a significant enough deal. I'm assuming that they were probably just unique is why they actually included them on their sign. And plus, they were either free or very, very cheap, so I'm sure that they probably could make some money off of them. Today, we buy 35 to 40,000 pounds a year from Iceland, and we get them shipped over here once a year and have them stored, and that's our number one selling appetizer now.
Unbelievable. All right, tell me a couple of the winning.
Tasty.
Yeah, you know what? I ate them, and they're delicious. You had me try some when we were there, and they really are. They're very good. You know, I know it's a little something getting used to what you're eating, but it's like anything else. It's just some meat. But Tell me some of the award winners that are on. I know we had that the salad dressings, which are homemade. There's a lot of special things you guys do that are must-haves when you come in.
So our salad dressing is unique in that we basically make the mayonnaise from scratch. So we don't buy mayonnaise and doctor it up. We actually use fresh eggs and half and half and oil and lemon juice and all the things that make mayonnaise. And we add other seasonings to it and chunks of cheese. So our salad dressing is a very, very flavorful garlic infused dressing. So the oil is marinated in 55 gallon buckets for a minimum of 14 days. Mm. And we use that oil to make the emulsification that makes the mayonnaise. So it's a creamy garlic mayonnaise with some other spices and little chunks of cheddar cheese in it. So it's very unique. It's delicious, and people buy a lot of it to take home with them. So that's something unique that people come here for. They're served with homemade croutons that we bake off. We make all of our bread from scratch in our bakery, fresh yeast rolls that we serve with dinner, and then we cut those into croutons to be served with that wonderful salad. So between the salad dressing and the lamb fries, and then, of course, the steaks, is those are the three main things that probably bring people in more than anything else that we do.
You know, I'm a big
Steaks David, are the draw.
I mean, of course they are, and they're delicious. I've been there, and what a treat. And, you know, David, I'm a big David Egan fan, if I could speak about you in third party. But what you've done to that place, I mean, I've done enough research, and having seen the operation and what you guys have built over 35 years is really extraordinary. And my hat is off to you. And now that I understand even better that the success of the restaurant has absolutely helped the downtown area succeed around it. That's a big tip of the hat. I mean, you're kind of being very modest about this, but that's a big deal. And look at all the people you've affected by being successful with what you do.
Well, you're very kind to say that, but obviously it was a lot of other people that had to come together too. I think that the area was really teetering on being rather insignificant, because there was a bank down here at the time that worked really, really hard to make sure that our deal worked out, because they knew that the draw of cattlemen's to this area was really key to keeping the area vibrant and going. So the bank and some of the other merchants in the area really got together, and we said, you know, what are we going to do to sustain this area and bring it back and make it, you know, a place where people want to come to. So we've got some very unique stores down here that are Western affiliated, most of them, either Western wear or furniture or saddles. We have probably the best hat maker in the whole country down here, Shorty's Cowboy Hattery, and they make custom hats for people that are will last a lifetime. And so there's a lot of unique stores down here. And it took a lot of effort from a lot of people coming together, but you're very kind to say that.
Well, and it's like stepping back in time. It's a great slice of history, and what a great story. Before I read the patented close, what haven't I asked you that must be said in this podcast?
Well, what makes our steaks better than everybody else's in town probably is the $100 question. And even though we don't give all of our recipe out for everything, I will tell you that there is a science and there is an art to quality beef, and that's something that we continue to learn every day. That there's nothing that a day doesn't go by that we don't learn something about how to make things just a little bit better for our guests. So, you know, we work really hard at securing high quality beef from a very, very narrow list of packers that have shown us over the years that they can provide an excellent quality product. And then we have to age it right. We have to cut it right. We have to give the customer what they want. We have to make sure that what the customers don't like is not part of the steak that we're presenting to them. And between the aging and the careful craftsmanship and everything just makes our steak just a little bit better than everybody else's.
You're a rock star. Hang in there while I read this. You've been listening to Steakhouse Hall of Fame, the podcast, and we want to hear from you. If it has to do with the steakhouse industry, let us know who we should interview. And while you're at it, don't forget to nominate your favorite steakhouse for induction into the Hall of Fame. You can reach me directly at ron@steakhousehalloffame.com. The Steakhouse Hall of Fame can be accessed through our app found in both iOS and Android device stores or at steakhousehalloffame.com. This is Ron Small with my special guest, David Egan, the Director of Operations at Cattleman Steakhouse in Oklahoma City. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, it was great. Always good talking to you, Ron. And, who doesn't like talking about steak and food and great wine and whiskey? That's what we stand for.
That's the Cattleman's Experience. And thank all of you for joining us for the Steakhouse Hall of Fame podcast. Until next time. Yeah.